Good morning, Grueling Truth fans. It's James Ernest of the Grueling Truth Radio Network here with Olympic athlete Shannon Miller. Shannon, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Good to be with you all.
So how was your Mother's Day?
It was fantastic. It's always fun to see what the kids have cooked up, and a lot of times that means breakfast and coffee in the morning and them doing a lot of the chores around the house, which is awesome. That's like the perfect Mother's Day gift.
That is so cool. So, world-class athlete, cancer survivor, author, sports analyst, mother, business mogul, and I know I'm missing something. How do you define yourself?
Well, that list sounds tiring. You know, it's funny because I think like most people, I'm not easily defined by one thing. I think, you know, every day it might be something different. It may be something different throughout the day. For me, my work is something I truly love, I'm passionate about, but the most important thing in my life is my kids. So being a mom, that's what takes the cake for me.
Definitely. I agree with you. Same here. Being a parent is obviously the most important thing. I got me a little guy who's 8, and he makes the world a difference in our lives.
Yes.
So what was life like growing up in Edmond, Oklahoma?
Oh, I love Edmond. It is such a great community. The people are so lovely and so supportive. When I was growing up, win or lose, it didn't matter. They were just always so supportive and helpful to me, my family. They helped raise funds so that my parents could actually travel to see me at my first Olympics because we just didn't have the money to do that. So they're always willing to pitch in and help out. But I think for me, growing up in Edmond just meant I kind of had that regular childhood. People talk about the sacrifices of elite athletes, and I feel a little bit bad because I don't feel like I sacrificed that much. I went to public school. I just lived with my family, did chores like my sister and brother, and went to work out there. Starting in Edmond, and then they moved the gym just a little bit further to Oklahoma City. So for me, it was a great upbringing that kind of kept that balance for me between gymnastics and how much time I spent there, but also the realization that gymnastics is a sport. It's not life, and I think that kind of helped ground me a little bit and not put too much pressure on myself.
That is awesome to hear because you're right. Most of the time when you hear about great athletes, you hear how much pressure and how much it was just obsessed they were with the sport. But it sounds like you got to live a nice traditional life.
I really did. I spent an inordinate amount of time at the gym for sure. But that's where I wanted to be, and that's where most of my friends were. So looking back and having a 10-year-old myself, I can't even imagine him being at a gym 4 to 6 hours a day. I just can't imagine that. But for me, when I was going through it, it didn't seem odd. I just kind of assumed everyone was doing that in their respective sports. And it's just somewhere I loved being. Not that it was easy every day. Not that it was wasn't challenging many times and going through some injuries and some different things. But overall, I just wanted to live in the gym.
Do you have a favorite road or parkway in Oklahoma?
Well, I guess I would have to. So after the 1992 Olympics, Edmond, they put up a sign as you enter Broadway, which is our main street as you go into town. And it's at home of Shannon Miller and some of the medals that I won during 1992. And after the 1996 Olympics, they added to that the 2 gold from those games and then went on to give me a parkway. Name a parkway, Shannon Miller Parkway. It's part of their highway system. And then put this huge statue in the park. It's now Shannon Miller Park. And it's such the perfect location because it's right beside the library, the Edmond Public Library. And I'm such a bookworm. So this is a place where kids can go to the library, but they can also hang out and read by the statue. They have events out there. It's just a great family place.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
At what age did you start your gymnastic training?
I started when I was 5. I folded my older sister really into the sport. She's 2 years older than me. And I think like a lot of kids, we started because our parents decided they did not want us tearing up their furniture anymore. We were trying to learn somersaults, and my parents, I think they thought we were going to get hurt or hurt their furniture. So they decided, it kind of looks like gymnastics, so maybe we'll sign them up. And from the first day I walked in the gym, I absolutely fell in love with the sport. I got to go into this big warehouse of a gym, jump in a foam pit, try to do somersaults, jump on a trampoline, run down a vault runway as fast as I could, and no one told me to stop. And so for me, that was heaven. And I just kept begging and begging to go more and more.
With your injury during 1992, were you ever worried you might miss out on the Olympic Games?
I did. And for those that don't know the history of that time, or weren't born yet, because that was a while ago, I broke and dislocated my elbow just in a freak, just miscalculation of a landing at a workout one day. And it was about 10 weeks prior to my first Olympic trials. 1992, I had just turned 15 years old. It was the first opportunity that I had to try out and try to make the team for the Olympics. And that night, I think it dawned on me as I was headed into surgery. They put a screw in to put the bones together. And I think for me, it was that moment where I realized, wow, I mean, this is a really big mistake. This could keep me out. It could keep me out of trying out for the Olympics. It could keep me out of the sport. And when I woke up the next morning and I was kind of being wheeled out of the hospital, headed home, my parents were with me, and my coach came in the doors of the hospital as we were leaving. And I will never forget, he looked down at me and he could have said so many things like, I'm so sorry. It just timing doesn't always work. Or, you know, maybe you can hold on and we can try to keep training and another 4 years. We can try to do this. But he didn't say either of those things. He looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, all right, we've got some work to do. I'll see you in the gym tomorrow. And it was just that moment that I saw that he believed in me. And I think that allowed me to believe in myself. And I was in the gym the next day. I couldn't do much. I could stretch and do a little bit of conditioning. But I learned throughout that time that when you have an injury, you just keep doing the things that you can do. And I became, I think, a stronger, more flexible, more well-rounded athlete because I was forced to work on my weak areas, which was strength and flexibility, instead of just working the routines like all the other athletes. And I did end up making the 1992 Olympic team and was probably in the best shape of my life and had a great Olympic game. So it was such a learning experience for me and one that I come back to often when I hit other challenges in life.
Yeah, I mean, going from the 1992 to the 1996 Olympics, how great was it to compete in front of your home crowd in the United States?
It was incredible, and I've had the wonderful benefit to compete at an Olympic Games overseas in Barcelona, see what that was like, stay in the Olympic Village there, so that was incredible, but there's just something about walking into the arena on home soil, you walk into the Georgia Dome, I don't know, 35, 40,000 people screaming at the top of their lungs. I'd never heard anything that loud. You've got flash bulbs popping. It's really like the 4th of July indoors and the crowd chanting USA. And the arena was just filled red, white, and blue. And it was just this incredible feeling of support. As you walked in, of course, we knew we better not leave without that gold medal, but it was just an amazing experience.
What was it like being a part of the Magnificent Seven?
You know, people ask us about that a lot, and I think, you know, during those Olympic Games, we knew each each other, but we didn't know each other certainly as well as we do now. We had competed against each other to get on the U.S. team. We had competed together at certain competitions, maybe a World Championships or a Pan American Games or something. But for the most part, during that time, you didn't have centralized training. So you trained at your gym in whatever city you lived in, and then you showed up to the competition. So there wasn't a lot of interaction between the athletes. And after the 1996 Olympics, we all went on tour. 99 cities for a year and a half on a bus. And that's where I think we truly became the Magnificent Seven. I mean, it started with that gold medal night, but we bonded as people, as friends, and that bond has just remained. Now we talk to each other all the time. We stay connected, and it's just been this great friendship that's evolved.
I've heard comparisons between the 1992 basketball team and the 1996 gymnastic team. Do you feel that those comparisons are accurate?
It's hard to say. I always get hesitant with sports comparisons because I always feel like when you achieve something great, or you watch another athlete or another team achieve something great, that's theirs. They did that. And I have such great respect for the 1992 Dream Team, and maybe a special place in my heart because I grew up watching all these guys with my dad. And they were the first athletes that we met when we walked into the Olympic Village in 1992. We'd been away from home for 2 weeks in France doing our training together before we went over to Barcelona and entered the Olympic Village. So I was 15. I was homesick. I hadn't seen my parents. Here we were, a lot of pressure going into your first Olympic Games. And we walk in, and there's these amazing basketball players. Of course, two times as tall as we are. Charles Barkley and Scottie Pippen and Larry Bird and all these guys that I grew up watching with my dad, and they were the nicest people. They took pictures, they talked with us, and we always share an arena with basketball during the Olympics. So I think we've just kind of, it felt like we were friends automatically, and we cheered for them. So for me, I hesitate to compare our team to them because they were just amazing, but I think our team was awesome too, just in a different way, in a different time.
They recently have done that documentary, The Last Dance. What do you think about a documentary about the Magnificent Seven, about your time on the road after the Olympics?
Yeah, I would love it. I don't know if people would enjoy watching it because we're pretty vanilla. There's not a lot of craziness that goes on, so I don't know if it makes for great TV, but it would show, I think, the incredible celebration and the way that we wanted to celebrate and thank so many of our fans and supporters, and just for those people that couldn't be at the Atlanta Games and see it firsthand, we wanted to go out and be able to perform and shake hands and sign autographs and take pictures and really just have the opportunity to say thank you for all of that support. So that was kind of the way we looked at the tour, and as an opportunity to keep doing something we loved without judges, just going out there and doing gymnastics and sharing that with people and hopefully getting another generation inspired to do the sport.
You recently did a fun Instagram live video with your former teammate, Amanda Borden. What was that like?
We had so much fun. It was funny. We thought at first we wanted to do this, and we were excited about it, and neither of us had seen the actual coverage, because you live it, and you see clips from time to time, but you never really sit down and watch the entire television coverage of your competition. And so we thought it would be fun, and as we started talking, we were thinking, there's no way we can fill 2 hours. How are we going to talk about this, our team, for 2 hours? That's going to be hard. And what we found was we kept talking. It was 2 hours later, and we didn't even know how to sign off. We wanted to keep chatting because we have so much to talk about. And I think the insight that we can give others that maybe have only seen the TV coverage, or maybe they weren't born yet. Maybe we're bringing this to them for the first time. So we shared some of our memorabilia, we shared some of our behind the scenes stories and things from our own perspective of being down on the floor and how things unraveled at the end, and then just what happened after. What happened after the medal? So all of those things were super fun to be able to talk to fans about and answer their questions.
You mentioned earlier about being in touch with the other teammates. So it sounds like you all communicate on a regular basis?
And for the most part, I mean, we're kind of like everyone else. We get busy. We text. We are on social media. So that's probably the primary. We see each other at different events, which is really nice. And probably just age and everything, we'll probably talk more to some than others, just because we have the same interests. And there's some that I see more often than others. I mean, Amanda both do analysis and commentary. So we are sometimes at similar events, which is nice.
Are you still involved with the gymnastics?
I am. So mostly these days I'm involved as an analyst and commentator, which basically means I go to the Olympics usually every 4 years, and I get to talk about gymnastics. And that's so much fun for me because I get to stay involved with the sport, but do it in a way that helps share these incredible athlete stories and share that with more people and the next generation, and really help explain to people that maybe are new to watching gymnastics or maybe longtime fans, to put in perspective how difficult some of these moves are, because these athletes make it look so easy. But as an athlete myself, I know how challenging they are. I know how you fall 1,000 times before you get it right. And we all see the end product, but we forget about the failures along the way. So to be able to bring that perspective is fun for me. It's something that's really important to me. But other than that, I think once a gymnast, always a gymnast. So I do have fun entertaining my children with handstands and cartwheels, maybe some social media challenges. But after that, not so many skills.
What are your thoughts on them postponing the Olympics?
You know, I think it's probably the best. I think we're all in uncharted territory. But I think the athletes understand is how, regardless of how difficult it is, and it is extremely challenging for many athletes, and there will be some that do not stay on for next year, because an entire year of training and the things that are happening in their own lives is just not going to allow for that. And so that is devastating. So you've got athletes that maybe were injured and didn't make the team that maybe now have a year to have another chance. So you've got stories on every side, but I think overall, from the athletes I've heard from and what we've seen, they understand as difficult that it is, it's the best thing for the health of everyone involved, not just the athletes, but the audience, the people that put everything together, the thousands upon thousands of people that it takes to put on an Olympic Games. So it's just, it's a tough one.
Yeah, and I'm just glad that they're postponing it instead of canceling it, because I know that was talked about at one point, and that would have been just awful.
It really would. As an athlete, you're training for years, you know, sometimes a decade or more for that one opportunity. And there are sports where you can, you know, have the opportunity to do multiple Olympics. Not every sport is like that. You may have one opportunity and the stars have to align. You have to be healthy. You trained to peak at just the right time. There's a lot of strategy involved. So to postpone is difficult, but I can't even imagine the feeling of having to cancel. I know athletes that were set up to compete in 1980 and never got their chance. And that was truly devastating for them after all of that hard work, all of that effort, to then not be able to compete. And I think a lot of times we think of top athletes. When we think of the Olympics, we think of, you know, a handful of the top athletes that have big endorsement deals, But for the most part, the vast majority of Olympians are just like, I mean, they're just doing their day job or 2 or 3 day jobs. And then they're training on top of that while they're taking care of their families. They're never going to sign a big contract for endorsements. They may not become a household name, but they're doing it because they love the sport. They want to compete and represent their country. And it's that type that I think is so important. We want to cheer on all of our athletes and make sure that we empathize with all the things that they're having to go through right now. But then also balancing that with keeping everyone safe.
Very true. You have 2 undergrad degrees, the marketing, the entrepreneurship, and you have a law degree. What made you want to go to school to get a law degree?
I didn't set out to get a law degree. I entered college a lot like everyone else, not really knowing exactly what I wanted to do when I, quote, grew up. And so I started, and after a couple of years, I decided I wanted to focus on marketing. I felt like that would be beneficial to the things I was already doing. I was a professional athlete. I was doing different endorsements at that time. And I wanted to learn more about it. It was very interesting to me. So I did that. And toward the end of getting my marketing degree, I had the opportunity to join a new entrepreneurship program that had been started. And it's a 2-year program to get your entrepreneurship degree. So it's basically like an MBA, at least a kind of a mini MBA. And I thought that would be great because I would learn more about having a business. I knew at that point I wanted to start a foundation, start a business. I knew I was getting very passionate about the importance of health and wellness for women and children. So I did that. And toward the end of that program, I took a business law class. And I suddenly realized how much I didn't know about law. And here I had been signing contracts myself for years, ever since I was of age. And I realized I didn't actually understand what was in those contracts that I was signing. And that scared me, just as an athlete. And sometimes you hear horror stories of athletes losing things and losing everything because they just weren't aware. So I decided at that point, getting a law degree would help me personally, but if I wanted to have a business, a foundation, it would be a good foundation for that. And I decided I'll study, I'll take the LSAT. If someone lets me in, great, I'll go. And I ended up at Boston College, which was wonderful. I just fell in love with the campus, and it was a great experience for me. And I would say, I mean, I use that degree every single day.
So how can we get a gold medal mindset?
For me, the gold medal mindset, this is something I do a lot of professional speaking to organizations, companies, small groups, large groups, and I feel like the gold medal mindset is for everyone because it's all about figuring out how to make today matter and realizing that today does matter. Everything that you do today matters. And the gold medal mindset for me is kind of a compilation of all of those lessons learned through sport. And the great thing is you don't have to have been an athlete or an Olympian to utilize those lessons because it's really a mindset. It's a mindset of going out and winning the day no matter what life or work throws at you. And so for me, it's things like goal setting, positive attitude, the importance of teamwork, committing yourself to excellence, the understanding that the mistakes and the falls and the failures will happen. It's how you get back up that matters most. What do you do next? Yes, you're going to fall. Yes, you're going to fail. What happens next? And I think for me, those that mindset and those lessons have helped me through pretty difficult times in gymnastics, but certainly through my most challenging time, which was a diagnosis of ovarian cancer in 2011. And these are the lessons that I kind of reverted back to during that journey and helped kind of keep me moving forward in that journey.
What inspired you to write your book? It's not about perfect competing for my country and fighting for my life.
For me, it really was my cancer journey. And I don't think the journey really ends. I'm coming up in June on 9 years cancer free. So I'm excited about that. But for me, it was kind of the, on the heels of chemotherapy. I went through surgery and then a pretty aggressive chemotherapy. And towards the end of that, I had started doing a blog. This is a while ago, so blogs were the thing. And I really had just started, but it was a way for me to share my thoughts and feelings and maybe vent a little bit about the tough days. And a lot of people started looking at this and sharing their own stories. And as I eventually got back to work and I was presenting, it didn't matter what city I was in, what organization I was presenting to, I kept getting the question, well, when are you going to turn this into a book? When are you going to write the book? And so finally I broke down and decided I would write the book. But I wanted it to be not just about the cancer experience, but about any challenge that we face, because we're all going to face challenges. And what can we do about that? How do we bring hope? How do we bring a positive attitude, not just pasting a smile, but how do we bring that positive attitude each day? And how, where do those lessons come from? And how can we utilize them each day? So that's kind of where, how the book evolved. And then, of course, the publisher wanted me to add more gymnastics and add more about my childhood and all of those good things. But the book is really about how do we overcome challenges.
You mentioned the blog a couple minutes ago. I really like your motivation, or Monday motivations. I really think those are quite inspiring.
Oh, thank you. I've tried to make sure that I have good posts on YouTube, my YouTube channel. Some of them are 10-minute fitness workouts. Some of them are Monday motivations, just something to get your day or your week started well. We've got gymnastics how-to videos, which are coming in really handy for all the gymnasts that are stuck at home these days. But I've tried to get more and more active on Instagram and Twitter to just be able to share more with people out there and have that conversation with folks.
So what are the current projects you're working on?
I'm always working on a number of things. Right now, like everyone else, I'm at home juggling two kids homeschooling, and which is new for me. They normally go to school and I go to work. But so that's been interesting. But for the most part, I've changed from going out and doing speeches and presentations to doing a lot of those virtually, which isn't as fun for me because I love being able to hug people and shake hands and see them and take pictures and be there one-on-one. But I'm still happy that people are enjoying and getting something from that gold medal mindset message. So I've been doing a lot of that and continuing to work with those companies that I've partnered with to really focus on health and wellness for women. And not to leave men out, I just don't know as much about men. Girls I know. So we really focus on making sure that we bring that positive message of health and fitness and wellness to women, and the importance of just making your health a priority. And that's something that's important for all of us. And it's really a tough thing to do because we don't want to feel selfish. We don't want to sacrifice our time with our family, our kids, our work, and the to-do list that we have every single day. But if there's nothing else I learned through cancer, it's that making my health a priority isn't just about me. It's about all of those that I want to be here for. It's all of those people that depend on me. How do I be healthy for them? And so this is really a passion of mine, to help people find ways that they can focus on their health.
It has been a pleasure having you on the show. Before we let you go, where on social media, where on the web, where on YouTube, where's all the fun places to learn more about you and your company?
Well, my website is easy. It's shannonmiller.com. And if you forget the social media handles, they are all on the website, shannonmiller.com. And then I'm on Twitter and Instagram at shannonmiller96. And I'm on YouTube and Facebook at Shannon Miller Official.
Sounds great. Thank you, Shannon.